Show with Anna DeBlantis off for another day of broadcast insolence.
Oh, boy.
A little behind here, but the White Sox had important things to get done.
They did.
Yeah. They had to get through nine innings.
And they got done.
Yeah. So here we are. And a lot going on. This is, I would say, a rather historic day in America because you've got this independent... The IG's report that has come out about the behavior of the FBI, of James Comey, of Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who were obviously in the middle of an affair and texting back and forth to each other. These are the headlines of a 500-page report that has come out. But there's a lot of detail in it, too, that is really interesting because it ultimately does not indict nor exonerate anybody, you know, and that's, I don't know how we got there.
And I think anybody of any persuasion could find something in here to make them feel even stronger about their opinion, right?
Yes.
Sure.
Renato Mariani is with us. You see him on CNN. He's now an official CNN legal analyst and a partner at Thompson Coburn here in Chicago. And what was your takeaway from what you've seen of this report so far?
You know, I have to say, it wasn't all that surprising when I read it. It was a lot of what we had already kind of seen and heard before. There was obviously, as you pointed out, some salacious details about the text that these two FBI employees had between each other. But we kind of heard about that before. I feel like I've heard a lot about those two people and what they had to say to each other. You know,
it doesn't look good for the FBI.
There was an additional thing today. I should stop and stop here. There was an additional thing today in which we'll stop him. There was a text between the two of them.
The text was, Trump's not ever going to become president, she wrote, right? And then his response was, no, he won't. We'll stop it. And that is left open to a lot of people's interpretation. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by we'll stop it? You're an FBI, senior FBI person. You have a lot of power to stop it if you wanted to use that power and if you're just not speaking out of school.
Well, they didn't, obviously.
They didn't.
Needless to say. It doesn't sound, it does not look good. It's not the sort of thing FBI agents should be talking about when you're investigating somebody. You know, typically when you're handling a high-profile case, you're very careful about what you say and what you do. You don't want to influence anything. I know when I investigated public companies or people who were high-profile individuals, I was very careful about talking about anything related to the investigation. Here, I'm sure that was 100-fold. That said, you know, a lot of the focus of it obviously was on things that we have heard a lot about, Comey's decisions about, you know, coming out there and making this kind of unusual announcement about, hey, I, as the FBI director, am saying we shouldn't prosecute Hillary Clinton. Hey, you know, now we're back investigating again. That was a little unusual. And I think everyone kind of thought that was weird at the time, a little unusual. I think a lot of listeners probably thought that themselves. So we find that in here. And regarding those agents, I mean, I think the takeaway in terms of the bottom line conclusion is that there was no political influence in terms of the decisions that were made. Hillary Clinton, there wasn't enough evidence to prosecute her. That was the right call. You know, really, it was more in terms of how the FBI handled things. And there were some of these salacious details and potentially some discipline that'll come to those agents for talking in that manner. But apparently did not affect their decision making, according to the IG's report.
The thing that shocks me, you know, doing this a long time, is you know, Renato, I'd love to get your perspective on this because you've been in the Justice Department, so you get this. Peter Strzok was a high ranking official at the FBI, right? I mean, he's not like a low level guy. He's not even low level guys. I mean, the field agents that I have come to know are really integrity filled individuals.
Absolutely.
They work very hard.
My experience as well.
Right. And
I agree.
They're sharp. They're smart. I mean, to become just a field agent, you know, you generally have to have an advanced degree of some sort. Most of them are lawyers, right? Most of them have
Many
law
are.
Degrees.
Yeah.
And so these are not dum-dums. And his behavior, and I guess, you know, there's the, you know, the corruption over time and you get comfortable in your job and maybe there has something to do with that, but it seems, you know, he's carrying on an affair with a Justice Department official and they're using their phones right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they work in this business. They get, they know
right.
what information could be available to, you know, your employer, let alone to the FBI.
Yeah.
And so it just, it did, the whole thing didn't make a ton of sense here.
Well, it certainly wasn't a wise decision. I mean, look, they've, I think they're paying the price for it, right? We're all
sure.
here talking about their affair, and their names are known across the country
right.
now, and, you know, they're paying a price for it. They made some really stupid decisions.
And they're considered to be, you know, enemies of the president at this point, which I don't think anybody really wants to be in that position. We'll get to that in a minute,
sure.
Renato, but I just,
yeah.
before we get to that.
But I will say this, look, everybody, whether you're in the DOJ or the FBI, everyone has private views. And it is important to set those aside when you make decisions. The problem is, you know, creating an appearance that you weren't, right? And like that text that, that you had read a minute ago creates the appearance that you're gonna let that seep into your decision making. The good thing people at home should know is that there's no one person that makes a decision in the FBI or DOJ. It's not like, you know, in your job where the boss just says this is what's happening and that's what happens. There's so many different layers of people who are weighing in on things that fortunately I think you know, the system, you know, may have worked in that respect. But look, you know, it's a problem. What I'm concerned about it, honestly, is not this case, but the long-term impact it has on how people think about the FBI and the DOJ.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and what my concern is that people assume, like, you know how they do this with judges, right? Well, it's a Republican judge or a Democrat judge, right? That because the president appointed that person
right.
is a Republican, that means they're going to rule that way. I'm worried that it's going to be like that with FBI agents.
And
now.
I think that's important to preserve. One of the things the IG's report did say is that there was no, this didn't influence the overall investigations, the work of these two agents did. But I think what bothered me, though, even beyond two agents who we'd like to isolate and say this is a terrible representation of the FBI, because this isn't mm-hmm. what these most of the agents are about, and the vast majority in the bureau are like. But the fact that there was a sort of a drip 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 of their texts to the congressional oversight, because that's one of the things that matters in our democracy. There is oversight for everything
right.
and everybody, and nobody's above the law. And when the Congressional Oversight Committee, albeit maybe politically charged, is asking for text messages, and you drip some out, then you say, wait. Some are gone entirely. We can't find them, even though we're the FBI. Then you find them, and then you leave this one out. To me, it doesn't feel as if the Justice Department is doing the right thing there, and that's why Christopher Wray stepped out just moments ago and said the appearance of impropriety is important, and we've got to retrain everybody on this in order to rebuild that trust if it is broken.
I agree with that statement that he made. I think the appearance of impropriety is a problem. When I was in the Justice Department, that was something that we considered. Even when you recused yourself or made those decisions, you would often recuse yourself when you didn't have to, just because we didn't want to come anywhere close to a point where people could question our decision making. You know, the text that they were writing, the behavior they engaged in, yeah, it does hurt the FBI. And look, I will say, you know, James Comey is a very tragic figure, because you get a sense when you read his book or you listen to his statements that the guy really wanted to sort of do mm-hmm. the right thing. I don't really think the guy was politically motivated, but he was tragic in the sense that by trying to do what he thought was right, he ended up hurting the FBI tremendously. People on both sides were angry at him at different times. So look, I do think that's important. Regarding the disclosure, I will say I don't think the FBI has been trying to hide things from Congress. They're all Republicans. They're all sort of in the same tent, but we'll see. I know there's some debate about that, and I know, for example, that the U.S. Attorney's Office here in Chicago has taken a role in that, because Sessions did that in order to say this is far away from Washington. We're going to get these people from
Chicago. We're going to Chicago.
We're getting people in Chicago.
What could go wrong?
We're known for our justice here.
There you go.
Yeah.
We're no dog in this Washington fight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
that's the idea.
That's not our brand. It is interesting, fascinating that we live in this time now, and I think you, Renato, hit on something exactly right about the zeitgeist here. That no matter what, you are associated now with one of the two tribes of American politics.
Mm-hmm.
And the two tribes have kind of splintered into three or four tribes. You know, the Bernie Sanders Democrats versus the regular Democrats, and then the regular Republicans versus the Trump Republicans. And so there's this, it's an uncomfortable swim for Americans, I think, because you are seen now so differently, even in your own family, by, you know, where you stand on these issues. And if you stand for one versus the other, you're seen as dumb or insensitive or obnoxious or whatever it happens to be. I've always been seen like that from my family, so it does not matter.
It doesn't change.
But I feel that we you know, now we're seeing that the levels of governance, whether it's the FBI, the Justice Department, the military, mm-hmm. right? These are the people who are sworn to protect the Constitution and protect Americans. And you have, we have now become, and you know, and I think that I firmly believe that Donald Trump, if Donald Trump didn't exist, we would have invented him. We would have created him in a lot of ways, because he's the perfect figure for the time in a lot of ways, whether because of social media and this partisanship and the tribalization, all of those things are happening right in front of our very eyes. And the question is, how are we going to come together on this? You have a president of the United States just, you know, flying back in Air Force One, talking to Brett Baer, friend of the show.
He's saying,
you know, a lot of people do a lot of bad things, right? You know, he's trying to create a moral equivalency between all the countries and North Korea. North Korea, since you know, Mao, then before him Stalin, before him Hitler. Those are the Kim family goes right up into that pantheon of great murderers in human history.
Starving their own people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the thing is that I get it. The president's transactional. He does not want to tick the guy off. He wants to get a deal. But how does he know he can trust to get a deal with a guy who's, you know, willing to do that and then willing to trick him into, and I think this really was a case of that, tricking him into saluting a general in the North Korean army. I mean, the whole thing is, it's kind of ridiculous.
It's like that happened.
And I don't know how to get optimistic about this. I don't know how this is going to fix itself.
Well, what I'm not optimistic about, I'm concerned about is, you know, there is no longer people don't have faith in an independent source of facts and truth anymore. And we get to a point where, you know, you're talking, let's say it's Thanksgiving dinner, you got the Republicans on one side and the Democrats on the other arguing, often with different sets of facts. You know, my father's visiting me today. His set of facts is very different than mine. We watch different.
He's probably never seen you on CNN.
I think that's safe to say. You know, he doesn't read my op-eds in the New York Times. Doesn't see me on CNN.
Thinks you're a failure. Probably
wouldn't listen to me on this show even, because you know. But to him and to many Americans, there's no source of truth that is independent and accurate, and that's really dangerous.
That
because
is.
You talk about coming together. I feel that there are forces in America that are trying to divide us, and
I wonder what those are.
Yeah, well, one of them I think is the president. Unfortunately, it fits his political strategy, but it's bad for our nation in the long run. And I don't know how we're going to overcome that. It really scares me.
Yeah. All right. So I will ask you this before I let you go, Renato, because I'm sure you got to run over to CNN now. As a CNN legal analyst and partner at Thompson Coburn, I don't know what's going on with the law practice, but I don't know. But you keep doing this. Now, here's the question. I sound like your dad now. What is the future of the Mueller investigation now that the FBI and Justice Department have been softened up?
You know, I don't think this should impact the future of the Mueller investigation, but what you're going to see is a continued ratcheting up by the president and his allies of attacks on the investigation. But what we're seeing is a PR strategy, because I think Giuliani said on the air one time, the jury is Congress, the jury is the American people, ultimately. They are trying to undermine the DOJ and undermine the FBI, because that's their enemy in this investigation. And so I think we're just going to see tidbits from this report used in the weeks to come.
How serious should the Trumps be taking this lawsuit now that they're facing, that was filed this morning by the Attorney General of the state of New York, that says that basically their charity, their foundation, was a shell company?
I think they should be taking it very seriously. They already have been changing some practices, giving some money back. I think that was cited by the New York AG. And the New York AG made some criminal referrals to IRS and to the Federal Election Commission. So I think that's a very serious suit, essentially using a charity as a piggy bank, right, for regular for-profit entities and for yourself. Not a good thing.
And your campaign, for the campaign as well.
For the campaign, very good.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, woo! Renato, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it. Hope to see you again soon.
Anytime.
Renato Mariotti, you can see him on CNN, and you can, I always like to say this about Mike Monaco, no case too big or too small, but at Thompson Coburn, yes, there are cases that are too small. So I just wanted to say that that's really the case. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Right now, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour? tickets for you.
Yay, go Hawks.
Yeah, for the Hawks convention, that is. Oh. Keep listening after 6.
That's fun, too.
Yeah, well, that's before the season starts.
Yeah, it'd be hard to give away tickets really for.
I mean, we could. But we won't. Do they even have the schedule out? They do, Kev, don't they?
No, we haven't seen the schedule yet.
We haven't seen the schedule yet. Don't even have the schedule out.
Well, how
yet.
Could we give them away? That'd be ludicrous.
That
wouldn't make any sense.
All right, so that's why. We're going to give you away a family four-pack of tickets to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton. That's July 27th to the 29th, the Chicago Hilton, the big one downtown on Michigan Avenue. Get your convention passes and hotel guest rooms online at chicagoblackhawks.com.
Okay. Hawks do everything right, and that is such a fun, fun event.
Yeah.
For everybody.
Yes, it is. So. And it's going to be fun. And I think it's going to be a partial new look Blackhawks.
Huh? Yeah, that'll be fascinating to see some of the new players and get excited about them.
Exactly.
So
we'll give you details on all of that. I keep asking Kevin when that's going to happen,
When's it going to happen, Kevin?
Any day now. There's some rumors circulating that are pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think, yes. Well, I can tell you that I think I know one of them, but we'll just have to see. It's too explosive to say out loud without getting a call. Getting a call from John McDonough going, "What are you doing? Why would you speculate about that?" All right, all of that is coming your way, but we got news in two. Your chance to rip us off for a family four-pack of passes to the 11th Annual Blackhawks Convention at the Hilton Chicago. That's the 27th to the 29th of July. Get your convention passes and your hotel rooms at chicagoblackhawks.com if you want to do that. You can't go wrong.
No, cannot. I'm looking forward to the 12 minutes from the loop to O'Hare with the Elon Musk proposal. I think that's fascinating.
Just wish you could fix the Kennedy.
I mean, you can get there on the Kennedy, too, if you ride the shoulder.
Says the traffic reporter.
I don't even know why you're talking about President Kennedy, but I would just like to say this. That Elon Musk has properly named his company the Boring Company.
Because it's boring. Got it.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny Depp.
That's not what your ex-girlfriend
said. Yeah, he's big into drilling holes. That's all he likes to do.
What?
Oh, God, yeah. Such a...
He's big on that.
That is such a cheap shot. It hurts my very soul. I don't know if you've seen pictures of me in the tabs, but I don't look particularly good.
No, he's looking a little gaunt these days, but we still like the Johnny Depp.
Now he's doing those weird car commercials like Matthew McConaughey, where they just like drive into a desert and like read like a poem or something.
There's nobody better to do a weird car commercial than Johnny Depp.
It's like him digging in the middle of a desert. He like pulls something out and then it's some cologne commercial. It's perfect for him.
That is. I haven't seen that
yet. Yeah, for Dior.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. His Dior ad looks good. I like that.
Very dark and mysterious, just like the fragrance.
That's right. I wear it in my Chevy Traverse. I was buying Chevys before Chevy was paying me to buy Chevys, which they're paying me now, and I don't know what to do about it. Who should we see about that?
In the commercial, he eyes a buffalo, like they stare down a buffalo.
Yeah, he's big on buffalo.
Yeah, and the buffalo's like, who's the stoner?
Like, what are you on?
The buffalo's like, I would normally roll over you right now and maul you, but I feel sorry for you. Look how gaunt you are.
Just keep driving, man.
Yeah, the buffalo's like, hey, listen, I heard what, you know what, I read in People Magazine what happened with you and Amber.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry.
She ultimately ditched Elon Musk as well, so.
Oh, God. Yeah, she did.
The classic, did. I'm a lesbian.
Yeah, that's the
it's
old.
It's not you.
Yes, I know. It's happened to me.
It's not you, I'm a lesbian.
Yeah, I have had women break up with me over that.
It's like they're telling you there's nothing you can say.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, that's nothing. Not a problem, actually.
That happened to me in college. I came back from the summer, and I'm like, hey, what's up? You know, it's, you know, it's like Kevin Blake.
Back together.
Sup?
Sup.
And
how's your summer,
like,
babe?
Yeah, right. Like, hey, look, are we going to hang tonight?
It was like Grease, but they all came back to school and she was a lesbian.
And then she's like,
she's one of the pink ladies.
I had some experiences over the summer and I think I think I'm
summer loving.
Yeah. And I'm like, is she here? You know, kind of thing. And
can I see her?
Yeah, and then no. I just think it's better we go our separate ways. Oh, and then like a week later, she's dating the quarterback of the football team.
Oh, she totally.
And I'm like, dude, she's like maybe
did
not.
Did she tell you?
Yeah, and like, all the girlfriends are hanging out with him. It was, you know, one of those moments. It's the kind of thing that happens to a Roka.
Really grounds you.
Yeah. A little heartbreak.
Yeah, a little heartbreak.
Toughens you up.
Yeah,
it does. That's why you're so tough. Do.
Yeah, that's why I'm real strong. Mm-hmm. All right. And she was not the only one who did that to me either. There was another one, too.
She probably got together and said, you know what you have to do? Just tell them. It's perfect. Hey, how'd you get away from
it? It's easy out.
Just tell them you like girls. Okay. All right, are you ready? Because it's 5
Let's
o'clock.
Do it. All
right,
ready
so
to go.
If we were going to do that, then we might as well do it this way right here.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
It's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Just minutes ago, FBI Director Christopher Wray issued the following statement during a press conference at FBI headquarters regarding the Inspector General's report.
This report did not find any evidence of political bias or improper considerations actually impacting the investigation under review. The report does identify errors of judgment, violations of or even disregard for policy, and decisions that, at the very least, with the benefit of hindsight, were not the best choices.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad look, he's pledging to review everything, more training. They need to avoid the appearance of conflict and political bias. But
there wasn't any, according to the IG, there wasn't actually active political bias that changed anything.
That affected the investigation. But right. If you look at those text messages, I think it's hard not to say there might have been some.
But everybody's got those. Right? That doesn't mean that you necessarily... I mean, if you're a doctor and...
Text messages. Read all of them. And then you feel is this the guy who should be the lead investigator on the Hillary Clinton email thing and should also be lead on the new Russia one against the Trump campaign? I mean, I don't know. It feels to me as if they do have some reviewing of procedures and policies. And that's what Christopher Wray says he's going to do.
You know what it feels like to me?
What?
It feels like to me that he was trying to impress her.
She was part of the Justice Department, too. She was no slouch.
But he was trying to be the kind of macho, don't worry about it, we'll take care of it, kind of thing. It was mansplaining, essentially, to her about how they were going to take him out. All right, but Christopher Wray says...
We've already started taking the necessary steps to address those issues. First, we're going to hold employees accountable for any potential misconduct. We've already referred conduct highlighted in the report to our disciplinary arm, OPR, which is the FBI's independent Office of Professional Responsibility. We need to hold ourselves accountable for the choices we make and the work we do.
You know what? As an American, here's the problem. This is very disappointing, I think, on a lot of levels. I think for everybody. I don't care if you're a pro or anti-Trump, pro or anti-Clinton, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's got to be disappointed by this report because you do see a lack of professionalism on display here. And it's on display in a way that maybe we can assume that these kinds of things have been happening for years and under many administrations, that lack of professionalism and stuff like that. But to have it happen at such a sensitive and important time where there is a confluence between the Justice Department and these two highly flawed campaigns, right?
Absolutely.
You have two of the most by-the-hip, kind of unprofessional, and for the Clintons especially, who are professionals in politics, they've always cut edges. They've always tried to cut around on a corner. And then you've got the the Trump campaign that, you know, were novices, and also kind of there's just enough larceny in them to really make it interesting, right?
Well, and the FBI was investigating both of them ultimately. We've
right.
learned it, her in terms of her server, private server, and her emails, and his in terms of his campaign's connections to Russia.
So
both running for office, both being investigated by the FBI.
But this is a moment where the FBI had to be playing everything by the book, and they weren't. And this is it. This is it. And so this leaves we Americans here, all of us, no matter what our tribe is, all of us to go, who do we believe? And that's exactly what enemies of the future of America and America's dominance and hegemony over the world, that's exactly what they want. That's exactly what the Russians want, what the Chinese want, what the North Koreans ultimately want, right? What the Iranians want, what all of our enemies really, truly want.
It's a good day for them.
Yeah. To see us flailing in our own corruption with a little c that is trying to attack corruption with a big C. It's a big problem. It's going to take some real leadership, and real leadership who likes to tell the truth. And neither of those two cats were capable of that, I can tell you, between Clinton and Trump.
Hillary Clinton tweeted out in the last 40 minutes something about Comey. Comey used a personal Gmail account to conduct official FBI business. One of the things that was in the report, and she wrote, but my emails. So she's obviously
right.
feeling some vindication by
yes.
this.
Nothing secret in the Comey stuff, though. He didn't have, it was just...
Right.
You know,
and one of the things that came out was that there was at least one secret marked email that was sent from Hillary Clinton at the time. So
yeah, okay.
There you go.
All right. Okay. Where's John Kasich when I need him? I need a hero here. I'm telling you. Congressman Maverick, President of the United States. Oh, I know.
If Donald Trump Jr. becomes president one day, now Kimberly Guilfoyle could be his first lady. That's been a confirmed couple now, so you know.
That's great.
Makes you feel better about the world.
It really doesn't.
Number four.
All right, one day after a report from CBS made the rounds suggesting that Sarah Sanders was about to call it quits, the current White House press secretary arrived for the daily press briefing loaded for bear. she had to answer questions from the impertinent press today about this whole separating of the kids from the parents at border crossings. So Jeff Sessions earlier in the day said that there were biblical justifications for doing that. I don't know what he meant when he said that. I don't understand. But then again, I really don't understand anything anymore. So Jim Acosta from CNN probed Sarah Sanders about how Sessions could possibly use the Bible to justify this.
However, this... hold on, Jim, if you'll let me finish. Again, I'm not going to comment on the attorney-specific comments that I haven't seen. That's not what I said, and I know it's hard for you to understand, even short sentences, I guess, but please don't take my words out of context. But the separation of illegal alien families is the product of the same legal loopholes that Democrats refuse to close, and these laws are the same that have been on the books for over a decade, and the president is simply enforcing them.
Okay. Now, that's when CNN contributor Brian Karam jumped in.
Jill, don't you have any empathy?
Jill, go ahead.
Come on, Sarah, you're a parent. Don't you have any empathy for what these people are going through?
Jill,
they have less than
Brian,
you do.
Guys,
Sarah, come on,
settle down.
Seriously.
I'm trying to be serious, but I'm not going to have you yell out of turn. Jill, please call.
It's a law, and they have, these people have nothing.
Hey, Brian, I know you want to get some more TV time, but that's not what this is
about.
I want to recognize you. Go ahead, Jill.
Honestly, answer the question. It's a serious question. These people have nothing. They come to the border with nothing, and you throw children in cages. You're a parent. You're a parent of young children. Don't you have any empathy for what they go through?
Jill, go ahead.
Whew, it got hot in there over that.
Oh, my gosh. The point here, and it is true, that this has been going on for years, the separation. It is, the numbers are higher now than they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's the truth. But the truth is also that this has been going on. It's been going on for over a decade. So... we do have to fix the system. And just, you know, cleaning out a Walmart, a superstore, and putting all the people in there, which they did in this one place that just got toured yesterday by the press, that is not helping. And I know the argument is, well, they shouldn't be coming to the border. They have to know that when they get here to the border, many of these people can't read to the chief of staff's point that he was trying to make a couple of weeks ago. There's a lot of people who are just desperate to get out of where they are coming from because they hear, they understand, they've been told through folklore that this is a better place to be than where they were, and they can come in and they can, you know, make money and then get out or get the money back to their family and all that. We know that to be true, right? So in order to do that, that's what people are doing. And then to be separated out like this is a pretty stark thing. There may be a better solution to this, but I don't think it's in anybody's political will right now.
No, everyone wants to keep this exactly as it is.
Right, because it serves both masters here. It serves the master of look how awful those Republicans are, and it serves the master of we're not going to let anybody in here to the Republicans. So I don't know. There is humanity here, and I felt bad for Sarah Sanders there. Because I get it, and I do understand, and I believe that story, even though she denies it vociferously now that she wants to get out.
Yeah, that was the first thing, one of the first things she talked about in this news conference today was, hey, are you leaving, Sarah? And she said, look, they didn't come and talk to me for that article that they wrote. She said, right now I'm here, and you know, this is doing my job on behalf of the government. And
right now I'm here.
I know, yeah, it wasn't exactly, leaving. It wasn't exactly, yeah, making you feel as if this is necessarily untrue.
Right. Well, she's not going to deny. She's not going to say, yeah, I'll be leaving soon. She's because then that changes her whole dynamic. She'd have to leave immediately.
Raj Shah also was on that list of people planning to
leave. Oh, I think it would be a good thing for Raj Shah to move. I think Raj Shah's next job should be at an Arby's drive-thru, is what I think it should be. He looks like a deer in the headlights every time he is on camera. I get it. Oh, they'll get some. You know, I'm telling you, man, bring the mooch back. If you want ratings,
gosh,
and I know that's what
please.
We're looking for here. Or hire Avenatti as a new White House spokesperson. Kim, what's coming up in the bottom of the hour?
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, and Joe Donlin, that is, weeknights on the WGN-TV News at 5, 6, 9, and 10.
Top 5 continues right here. Checking in.
Number 3.
Kim Kardashian says the first person she called to start the process of freeing Alice Johnson was Ivanka Trump, who apparently got things in motion. Mm-hmm. Kim and Alice sat down with Today Show host Hoda Kotb to explain how Alice came to be released from prison last week while serving a life sentence. Kim says she called Ivanka, who was completely sympathetic.
At first, I just retweeted it, and then I sent it to my attorney. I said to her, is there anything we can do? Can we, you know, hire different attorneys? Like, what are the options here? What can we do?
After being incarcerated for 20 years, how well did you know Kim, the name Kim Kardashian?
I didn't. I did not know her name. I didn't know Kim. As soon as I found out who she was, I started getting every magazine I could find. I started reading everything that I could about her. And everyone was amazed, and I was amazed, too.
There's some place you actually don't know Kim Kardashian.
Do you get people in prison? Or is it
People Magazine?
Do you get Us Weekly?
Us
what
Weekly,
do you get?
Or I don't know.
In
I mean,
Touch?
It's surprising to me that you could avoid knowing Kim Kardashian in this culture we're in.
Yeah. I don't know. Not spending a whole lot of time in the day room. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know. You know, there are parts of this I get. I never liked the Kingpin law. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't think that, then that's what she was charged. That's why right. She was sentenced to life in prison because of
a large amount of drugs. She was part of that
right.
network.
She was one of the people running, mm-hmm. not taking part in running a $25 million cocaine ring mm-hmm. that was across the United States of America and was international in terms of its distribution. So, I mean, she actually did apply for the life sentence because she is, by definition, right. a kingpin.
Right, well within those parameters. She delivered over $1 million at one point as part of an exchange. She's, you know, she was yeah. making calls between major drug dealers to move the dope around.
Right.
I mean, she was central to it. But life in prison, I suppose that's what that many people would argue with. And actually, Jared is one of those who
yeah.
is for criminal justice reform, and maybe that's why it caught Ivanka's eye, because she knows
sure.
her husband's
mm-hmm.
interest in that.
Right. Right. They're going to, I think before this whole story is said and done, mm-hmm. they're going to be very interested in prison reform.
Yeah. Good cause to have.
Checking in at
number two.
During his monologue last night, Jimmy Kimmel joked about the president bragging that he has that he is a great judge of character, especially when it comes to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
He's right. He's a great judge of character. You can almost tell right at the beginning how the relationships are going to go. Like when, for instance, he met Jim Comey. You could almost tell at the beginning. Or Jeff Sessions, you could tell at the beginning. Or Ryan Priebus. Or Steve Bannon. Or his first wife, Ivana. Rex Tillerson. Or H.R. McMaster. Or Omarosa. Or Marla Maples. Or maybe even his two good friends, Bill and Hillary Clinton. He's got the best instincts. He really does.
The list is pretty long. When you hear it like that, it doesn't sound so good.
Yeah,
it?
I think that's a pretty good way of putting it. All right, and finally,
number one.
Here's something we can all agree on. If you have ever seen Between Two Ferns, the Zach Galifianakis talk show, which appears on the interwebs.
Yes.
You know it is the most awkward thing ever on television.
So
it is designed to be awkward. And his latest triumphant return with Jerry Seinfeld and Cardi B did not disappoint.
Cardi B, Zachy G, Jerry J.
What's the J?
Jew. So we got you a gift, because that's what you do in show business.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
See, I got a gift.
You know, I didn't get anything.
Ooh. Rep bag.
Yes. I don't know if you're going to have a boy or girl, but the color is gender neutral, so.
I'm special.
You are special, but the most important thing is that you're relevant.
Boy, this is a really different interview than the one I did. I'm not even Between the Ferns anymore. I don't even fit the description of the show.
Right. When I do another show called To the Right of a Fern, you'll be the first guest.
Thank you.
Gee, that is so awkward and so great.
Zach Galifianakis is amazing.
I love him.
He is absolutely amazing. All right, we are done with this.
The top five at five.
Con show right here with Anna DeVlantis,
yes.
With Kim Gordon in for the Judy Pilak, so we can all sort of rest easily.
Is it Friday?
It's like when you're it's like when your angry aunt next door.
Yeah.
You know that she lives right next to us in the house. You know, it's the four of us in the house.
Sure.
And then Aunt Judy lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like when Aunt Judy decides she's going to go either on a bender or like you know for a weekend at the Dells, and you're like, oh, and then our other aunt. Mm-hmm. Kim comes in from out of town, you know, to
she's
you know,
so lovely.
Pick up on all of this.
She brings presents.
Yeah.
She's always so nice.
She's
I
so
know.
Sweet
she asked
so
me the other day if I wanted some tea.
She does laundry for everyone.
Kevin's happy about that.
Cleans.
Because he's not in the house anymore. It's hard to get the laundry done.
Right. It's perfect. Folds it, puts it in a basket for me. It's
great to have Aunt Kim around.
Yes, it absolutely
it really is.
It's a little quieter around here.
Yeah. True.
A little quieter, a little less angry. we even Anna and I are afraid. You know, it's that kind of thing.
It's like, are you going to go with me to the parking lot today?
Right.
Just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Sometimes I said something.
At
Judy.
Night, after Judy's gone, we sit around, we whisper quietly, afraid that she might be around the corner. Really? Are you? She scared me today. So that's the way that went. So really interesting. You know, it's an interesting thing. So we're having some fun. Hey, I just want to say that you know the kids are over at the new studio today,
right.
And we're here. We start Monday at the new studio.
Huge.
Yeah.
We should get snacks and refreshments. Let's celebrate this.
Yeah, we should celebrate.
Maybe some food. Maybe get the Canarble on a Monday.
It could be interesting. Yeah, I think we might be able to do that.
Canarble all week.
That's my opinion.
They have just fixed up our office now, so it's all ready to go for us. I have noticed, though, that they stored the Canarble wagon, the actual real Canarble wagon that we will use. And now we can actually, before we couldn't use it because we'd have to move it. Our offices were seven floors away from the studio.
So we'd be carrying bottles up and down in the elevator.
Now we can just roll it a few feet down the hall, and we are right in our own studio.
Perfect.
So
and they can move from studio to studio.
So we need a new Canarble wagon.
Okay,
what?
Cool.
Huh.
Yeah.
Can I get it?
I don't know. We're gonna, you know, to inaugurate the studio next week, I have personally invited the Walter E. Smith daughters.
Okay.
To come in, they're designers.
You dream it, we build it.
Yeah, and they are expert in this thing.
Cool. Yeah, actually, let's let them do it.
I think they should do it.
Yeah. Yeah. We can dream it.
You just hand them my credit card as you do to everybody else, and we'll work this thing out. And
Should I tip them?
Nice tip. Tip them nice. They do a nice job.
I never know who you're supposed to tip in this world anymore.
I don't think you're supposed to tip the daughters of Walter E. Smith, but, you know, it's okay.
But a delivery guy who carries things in for you.
That guy. I think the daughters are okay. I don't think you have to worry about that.
I text someone once I was at the dentist. I'm like, do you tip the dentist? When I'm, like, waiting in the room to pay, you know? You don't, apparently.
This is a very Southern European thing that we're experiencing here. With Violetta, it's sort of like, are you tipping to try to stay out of trouble with the government, the law, the you know what? It's like I swear to God, I've seen this happen every time we go out. She somehow, and I don't know how this happens, because I don't think, you know, these jobs don't pay that great, you know, with, you know, the being a traffic reporter in this town. She always has a C note in her hand. It is like a scene from The Godfather. It is true.
I don't know who you're supposed to tip, so I just rather tread cautiously.
And she's not handing out 20s, because 20s gets you a lot in this town.
True.
But she hands out C notes to people.
You hand it out? Wow.
And I'm like, who are you giving it? Yeah. And I'm like,
gosh.
I mean, the people, I don't know where she's getting, I don't know why she's so cash flush. You know, I don't know what goes on.
Bronco's wallet.
Yeah.
Violet is an entrepreneur, so she's got entrepreneurial venture.
That's the term. Entrepreneur. That's what the woman at the life sentence said, too. You better get to know Kim Kardashian.
That sweet grandma have so much money. It's so weird. Makes a lot of phone calls, always driving around her vehicle.
Interesting group of people are stopping by the house.
A lot of people coming and going. A lot of friends.
Yeah.
Your part-time traffic reporter handed me a couple $100 for bringing her car up in valet.
What's going on here?
You didn't go through the trunk, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right.
Leave it up front where I can see it. Man, you're driving a Honda.
Oh, man.
It's a very
nice
Honda Accord, by the way.
Yes, you did. Yes, yes. That's right. It is correct.
So Walter E. Smith.
The daughters. Yeah. Right, the Smith daughters, now, as they're known, are going to come in, and they're gonna do an evaluation for us next week.
Oh.
They're going to look at our office.
Wow.
And they're going to look at the studio, and they're going to come up with some things.
Yeah.
Have we officially acknowledged the new name of the studio?
Nope.
We have not.
We have not.
Okay.
I feel like we have.
No.
Not till Monday, I guess. I'm being told.
Not till Monday.
I mean, we all know it now because it was in an email, and that'll get leaked to the press.
Wait.
And then the Trump administration will, you know, throw the leakers in jail.
Well, it's very dangerous to be a member of the press.
Right. But that's whoever the reporter is who reports it.
No leakers here at GN.
Yeah.
No.
Nope. You're not going to get that name.
We have a listener from 630 who says, let me design it. I'm a Chicago artist. It would be awesome to cast it out of metal, but we already have an arrangement with the Walter E. Smith.
We have an arrangement.
I'll take a painting.
That is what they want to paint me something. That's how Violetta refers to it. I have an arrangement.
Don't worry about it. I got a couple C notes.
Yeah.
It's already set up.
Can we ask where the C notes came from, or is that not allowed? Do we not?
I don't know. Just around.
I don't think she's going to tell us.
Okay. Then that's why I didn't ask initially.
I've just seen it happen twice. And I'm like, the person looks at it, goes, what? Like in their hand. And I'm thinking, it's got to be counterfeit. That's the only thing I can think
of. Counterfeit, please. Just trying to take care of the team, you know?
Yeah. All right.
Take care of the team.
I mean, you guys are kind of high maintenance. I'm the one who does all the background, you know, planning. So it goes seamlessly for you guys when you show up.
Going back to this family analogy here. Mm-hmm. So I just want to, you know, for those, you know, who have, you know, kids and they're, you know, teenagers or millennia, you know, like early 20s, whatever, in their house, and they're still in their house, they won't leave. And one of them comes home with a stack of hundreds.
Uh-huh.
Don't you ask the question, where
deserving
did you get
follow-up.
That?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very many follow-up questions.
Yeah, but we just heard how she answers those. I don't know, around. You know, just around.
No, Bronco's question is, hey, can I get a half of that? Where'd you get all that? Give me half.
Right. I mean, from the register? Where is it? And then all of a sudden I'm wondering, okay, so at Concrete Cowboy, what kind of, you know, the stacks that are on the table, where's that? What's going on there? That's what I want to know.
Boris will tell us.
Boris doesn't like us talking about this, I don't think.
No.
Boris takes care of Concrete Cowboy. I don't have to pay there.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. A lot of Vegas bombs. A lot of drinks being poured there.
Okay.
Can't be held responsible.
All right, I understand.
Bottle service is expensive.
I think Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are going to be doing a full investigation into once they are separated from the FBI and the Justice Department into what Violetta. I'm going to hire them personally to find out what Violetta is up to. She's got a side job of some sort, and
but
I just want to know
us.
What it is.
Yeah, I can use a few extra bucks, Violetta. Let me in on this.
Yeah, employ Kevin.
She used to have a business. I do know this. Yeah. I mean, we were aware of this, that she did have a...
It was a good business.
She had
my money.
Yeah, okay. She had a
all
side business. She had hot dog stands.
Can you believe that?
And people pay for hot dogs and $100 bills.
I'll have 500 hot dogs, please.
Okay.
I do.
Yeah. So she had that. I do know that.
It was on the beach. It was a very nice little location.
Yeah. You had a very successful business guy. I mean, you are the great, like, first generation American story of, you know, working hard. Mm-hmm. You don't care. You're not playing by any of the, you know, those fuddy-duddy rules that people have and they're afraid of failure. You just went right out there and you know, you started your own thing. And, mm-hmm. and you know, I give you a complete credit for it.
God bless. The
city had no idea that you were doing it.
No. Permits are secondary.
Everything was legit.
Mm-hmm. Food department, totally on board.
Yeah,
I got a guy, actually. His name's Guy at the sanitation department.
Mm-hmm. Good to do.
Yeah, he's really nice.
That.
His name's Guy.
Right.
He loves the show. He follows us on Twitter. He's so cute. Shout out to Guy, sanitation class.
That's not going to help you, by the way, when Peter Strzok and Lisa Page are questioning you.
What is
I got a guy. You know, that's a great name for a city worker in Chicago, isn't
right?
it? Guy?
Yeah.
Because
right.
no,
he
worry
is
about
the
it.
Guy.
I got a guy at Streets of Sand.
He was born to be a city worker.
I got a guy at the health department. I got a guy over at the city works.
Need tickets? I got a guy.
Yeah. Water department? I got two guys. Two tree guys. All right. Let me stop right here before one of us goes to jail.
Okay.
And it's not going to be me.
It's not going
to
be me.
In all the mob movies. Someone's going to jail. It's not going to be me.
Forget about it.
All right. All that. There's more to be had here. But first, let's find out from Kim. Aunt Kim, what's coming up at the top of the hour news?
Jeff Sessions citing the Bible over the Trump administration's policy of separating families at the border. That story coming up at 6 from the WGN Radio Newsroom.
I will be listening with great anticipation because I do not understand that.
No.
I do want more clarification.
Understand. Not a lot of detail just yet, but we're excited about part of that.
Yeah. Blaine's Farm and Fleet bringing you Violetta's traffic.
Lakeshore Drive is busy. Right now, northbound is about an hour from Market to Hollywood. South is 30. That's 32 minutes from Hollywood to Monroe. And then
She's got $100 bills. See what's going on here? And yet she's got $100 bills. I don't understand. All right, go ahead.
It's hard to count to 60 when it's 100.
Yeah, okay. I know. Everything's hundreds.
I know, but everything with travel times is like an hour. 60 minutes? Okay.
This right here on the 720, the W, the G, and the N. And here is Richard Roper. He stepped in the studio. We're going to get you ready for the weekend movies.
Hello.
And we got a lot.
I like
to...
the music.
Yeah. There you go. Oh, and we got, we also got, let's see,
what?
Blackhawks tickets. What am I doing?
Oh, what do you have?
I got the family four pack.
Nice.
Coming up in just a few minutes to the Hawks convention.
Mm-hmm.
The best.
And such a fun time.
Oh. I know.
Rich, you were there with us last year.
Last couple of years I've been with you guys. Always have a great time. Maybe the best run, and a lot of the Chicago sports teams do a great job, but that may be the best run convention of any team in the country. They do such a great job.
Well, didn't John McDonough essentially invent the convention?
He did.
He took the wheel and said, we're reinventing this. Yeah. It should be round.
Somehow perfected it over That's there true. For the Hawks. Really amazing experience.
Right, because he invented it for the Cubs That's 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Cubs were really not so good. And there
what
was...
What doing?
And he had to come up with it with an excuse for keeping them relevant and interesting.
It's true,
which is what he always did.
Off season. Mm-hmm.
And he created the Cubs convention, which became an instant hit.
Amazing.
A bunch of the other teams started doing it, and then he brought it to the Blackhawks when he took over the Blackhawks 10 years ago, a little over 10 years, 12 years ago. And it's a magnificent experience. I got to tell you, fan involvement of kids,
mm-hmm.
hockey there's no better. It's the way baseball was when we were kids. You know, that's so many kids play hockey. Mm-hmm. So many kids, so many families are hockey families, you know, the travel hockey families and stuff like that. And they are there, and it's created this. It is such a fun family event.
Yeah.
And I do suggest people get a hotel room for the weekend
because mm-hmm.
there's cool stuff to do, not only at the convention, but you're also down on Michigan Avenue, across from Grant Park, there at the Hilton. It's great.
It's amazing. Right. Very interactive, too, for families, as you mentioned. Kids get to do all kinds of cool things.
Feels like great accessibility, too. I mean, I was listening to all the young fans saying, I matter, I talked to, and what, were there for the Q&A when Jonathan Dave said this, or...
Listen,
you
go to Comic-Con, you ain't going to touch an Avenger, okay?
No.
You're going to be way over there.
If you want tickets to this, or you want to book your hotel guest room, you can do that also at ChicagoBlackhawks.com. They'll handle the whole thing for you. There you go. All right. Well, speaking of kids, Incredibles 2 is coming out this weekend. And people love The Incredibles.
Yeah. Anna, are you excited about this one?
I hope I will be once I hear what you have to say.
Well,
we do see almost all of these.
And the cool thing about this is, of course, it's about a superhero family, which is just a neat concept. And the great Brad Bird, he did the first Incredibles. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. When he did that movie, that was pre-Marvel Universe, pre-all of this stuff. So it was kind of revolutionary because it was kind of, you know, what they say, like a meta, winking superhero satire, but also a great superhero movie about a superhero family. And now it's been, I think, about 15 years since the original. We get The Incredibles 2. And I know one of the reasons I think of people like Rokan enjoying this because The Incredibles is actually... I'll tell you why. Well, and not because it's about a dysfunctional family. But no, because it's actually set in 1962. They don't make a big deal out of saying that, but it's set in kind of a futuristic 1962. So the cars and the sets and all of that have that early 60s cool feel.
Yeah.
The songs, there are theme songs for Mr. Incredible sounds like a theme song that you'd have for Matt Helm or somebody like that. You know, like cool, who's the cool dude?
Yeah.
And then it's also futuristic, but it's also animated. So I am giving 3 stars to Incredibles 2.
Wow.
Guys, not 3.5 or 4, which I was hoping. So even though I'm recommending it, it was a little bit disappointing just because they split up the family. I don't want to give it too much away for a lot of the adventure, just because Elastigirl, who's the mom, Holly Hunter, mm-hmm. she goes out and starts to save the world while Dad, who's voiced by Craig T. Nelson, stays home with the super kids. So it's sort of a Mr. Mom kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
which, given the 60s setting, is good. But we've seen that in a lot of movies, even though they're superhero kids. So that kind of, to me, is like, I like them when they're working together as a family. That's the best part of those movies. And the villains aren't, all that creative. But the Pixar animation is just something to behold. Every little
detail.
So true. Colors and then the messages are really fun about families sticking together, and I love how the little baby, they call him Jack, and they find out that the infant has superpowers that pretty much are stronger than the rest of the family combined, but it's still an infant, it's still a baby,
right? And I think every parent knows that too, because every parent is a little afraid of their baby.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, that is really true.
Oh,
you love
true.
Your baby, uh-huh. but you're just a little afraid because you're just not sure what's going to happen.
And that's what I love about this, that it kind of plays on those types of, psychological themes. And, the baby. And I will say this. This is a PG-13 movie. It's pretty intense. And, everybody's been having a lot of fun with that viral raccoon this week that climbed up the side of the skyscraper.
Oh, we were all worried about
Let's all remember that, raccoons are the worst. They're the worst.
Oh, but that one was cute.
They're oversized rats who are also bandits.
I like that.
And there is actually a scene in this movie where Jack the baby sees a raccoon going into the garbage can outside the house, and there's an extended violent brawl between an infant and a rabid raccoon in this movie.
Oh.
And all of a sudden you feel like, did Tarantino show up and direct for a couple of days? I mean, a crazy violent brawl between a raccoon and a baby.
Can you explain?
God, they're animated.
Explain something to me
about,
now the difference between, Pixar is owned by Disney,
mm-hmm.
but Pixar maintains its own animation studio, right?
Yes.
Is that how that works?
Yes.
Because they don't do, like when Disney does an animated film, It's a Disney.
It's a Disney.
Film.
It's you know, yeah. Pixar still has its, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people, you
they're
know,
they're up
work
in
there,
San Francisco, or
and it's
right?
their, yeah, it's their separate, and it, you know, they do the thing they do with every great Pixar movie. You start by seeing a short film, which is really fun and cool.
Yeah, great.
And the short film is usually, you know, the director of the short film is usually on his way or her way to becoming a feature film director. Mm-hmm. So that's really neat. And then you see those credits at the end of Pixar movies, which are amazing because you see it's the longest credits that you'll ever see. And stick around for this one, too, because they have a lot of fun like they usually do with kind of the post-credits thing. So, yeah, they, you know, Disney's part of their brilliance is why would you mess with the Pixar formula? Let the, you know, the geniuses.
Just buy them and let them be them.
And you have people like Pete Docter, who did the Monsters movies and many others, Brad Bird. You know, who have been there from the start, who started in the animation department and worked their way up to assistant directors and continued to stay there. And that's usually why there's such a long gap sometimes between these, like Finding Nemo to Finding Dory. It's because the people who are responsible for it want to wait till the right moment. And here's the great thing about animated films. Holly Hunter and Craig T. Nelson play the parents. They haven't aged a day in 14 years because they're cartoons.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to make that point before we move on. But okay. I love both of them. Craig T. Nelson is one of the great character actors of this era, of, you know, the last 30 years, from Coach to now. Right?
Yeah.
And he's always, he plays a bad guy really well. He plays a dopey dad really well. He plays it all.
Yeah.
But he's, you know, got some age on him now.
Well, yeah, he's one of the love interests in that movie about the old broads.
Right.
It was called Old Broads. Don't get mad at me. No, it was the book.
It was called
Book Club.
Okay.
But, like, he was one of the love interests along with Richard Dreyfuss.
Yes.
You know.
Right.
Was that the one with Andy Garcia?
Don Johnson were the younger lovers.
Right.
The movie with Diane Keaton and Jane Fonda.
Right. Yes. So Craig T. Nelson's got a little age on him, and Holly Hunter has got to be in her mid-50s now.
Oh, 60-something.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. So, but they still can, they can play 30-year-olds if they have to which is great.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of those where they might not release the video where you see the actors, you know, side by side with their animated character, because you'd be like, oh, how come the Mr. Incredible has Metamucil next to his microphone?
I have Metamucil next to mine, too.
What's wrong with that?
Okay, Superfly. Let's do this. I want to do Tag, but we'll do it after the break.
Okay.
Because Tag, I'm totally interested. John Hamm new movie.
Yes.
But Superfly, the remake of the 70s film, which was a classic.
Yeah, you want to do Superfly right now?
Yeah.
Talk about Superfly? Okay, yeah, so people probably remember that you guys actually played one of the great Curtis Mayfield tracks. 1972 Superfly, kind of one of the leaders in what they call blaxploitation films. And I still think Superfly soundtrack by Chicago legend Curtis Mayfield, top 10 soundtrack of all time, right?
Yeah.
So this is a remake. It's pretty much the same story. It's about a drug dealer who wants to get out by making one last big score. It's set in modern day Atlanta. For once, they're making a movie in Atlanta, and they're calling it Atlanta, which is good because they usually call it Chicago.
That's true.
And it's you know, it's very well done. You have to know going into this is an R-rated movie, and you know, I think some people are going to say, geez, you know, it's playing into all the stereotypes, because almost every character, almost every African American character in this movie is either a drug dealer or a gangster or a stripper. But that's what the movie's about. That's like saying, right, well, everybody in Goodfellas is a gangster. Well, that's what the subject matter is.
Right.
So knowing that.
And the original Superfly was about that.
Yeah, and it's really well done. It is violent. It's wickedly funny in parts. It's got a great style to it. The director of this movie, you know the name of the director of this movie is? Director X.
What?
His name is Director X.
Did he change his name?
Is it Spike Lee?
It's not. It's Director X. He's comes from the video world, but actually the music videos he's shot for everybody from John Mayer to Jay-Z. If you look at the videos he shot, they're like miniature movies. They're beautifully done. So it's not like, oh,
we don't think this is really a guy that
his name is Director X. Remember Racer X was Speed Racer's brother?
Is he Johnny Lee, Spike Lee's brother? What is it?
I can't tell you. It's Director X.
We really can't know.
That's what he calls himself.
Does he do like promotional stuff? And I mean, he gets out
it's
there.
It's Director X with a period next to it, so it's very hard.
Will we see him on television?
I think you'll see Director X on television, sure.
As Director X.
Will we recognize him?
He's just Director X. It's not a secret.
Okay.
You know, it's not
a cover name.
Director X is Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was going with that. Is it somebody else? But
no.
But
3 stars for Superfly.
Wow.
It was one of those. You know, you go in with an open mind, but I really kind of felt like, why are they bothering with this? But it's really well done. It's got some funny touches, and although Future, the hip hop artist, he's the curator, as they say, of the soundtrack, and has a lot of modern artists. But they're smart enough to know that you have to have a montage set to Pusher Man by Curtis Mayfield, and they didn't do a hip hop remake. They just play Pusher Man by Curtis Mayfield.
It's one
in the middle of the movie.
The great songs of the 1970s.
Yeah.
So you can't go, you know, one of the great pop songs in the 1970s. And, you know, I just, okay, this is not like Donald Glover and Childish Gambino, right?
No.
Okay.
It's not. It's no. Don't get hung up on Director X. Stick with Superfly.
All right. We're going to find out if the John Hamm movie is worth seeing and John Travolta.
Oh.
Stars as John Gotti in a film. And Richard Roper sat down with Mr. Travolta. We will talk about all of that. But first, we check in with Kim Gordon. What is coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Quickly, we have this. 100 events, 19 days, one epic food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com for the ultimate Chicago food experience this August.
All right, I'll do that.
Yeah,
Richard Roper is here. He gave 3 stars to Incredibles 2. Kids will still love it.
I think so. Yep. Families will love it. It'll do very, very well.
It's a little less. It's a little less engaging for the parents probably than the other ones have been. Yeah. Right. The other.
It's a little repetitive with the action sequence.
Just close your eyes for the raccoon sequence.
Listen, repetitive. I grew up on the Flintstones, where when there was a chase scene, there was a potted plant and a window, and a potted plant and a window. I know about repetition.
Yeah. That freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah. All right. Now let us talk about tag.
Want to talk about tag? Okay. So, Wall Street Journal in 2013 published an article about a group of guys in their 40s who, for an entire month every year, play tag. Yes, the game of tag. And they had done it for decades. And all bets are off for the 11 months of the year, but one month every year, they play tag. Elaborate game of tag where anywhere you're at. And no prizes, no, you know, penalties if you lose. It's just they played tag. And that was an article. I'm like, okay, that's a pretty interesting article. But to show you how starved Hollywood is for ideas, within a week they had like 15 movie offers to tell their story.
What?
And it got turned into a major motion picture. Now, there's a fictional version of this. And if you look at the cast, it's John Hamm and Ed Helms and Hannibal Buress and Jeremy Renner. I mean, that's a you know, star-studded cast, right? Isla Fisher, who's a terrific comedic actress.
Love her.
She plays Rebel Howard, if you watch Arrested Development.
Right. Isn't she Mrs. Borat, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Sacha Baron Cohen. So they turned this into a full-length movie. And I, again, going into this movie, like, how are they going to make a movie about five guys in their 40s who have been playing tag
for
30
years?
It's
an elaborate game of tag, right?
But it's just tag. Well, because they live in different parts. So it's always, you know, it's the setup. It's, you have to get close to somebody. So, you know, if someone's in the delivery room with their wife giving birth to their first child, a friend will walk in and go, hey, congratulations, you're it, and tag them. At dad's funeral, they will tag them. So when you hear that, you think, well, these guys sound like five of the most obnoxious, selfish, immature jerks ever.
Jags. Jerk, it's a jag.
Knocking, you know, and they will do it in hospitals. They'll knock people over all to play tag. And Jeremy Renner's character is the guy that's never been tagged. So he's got kind of like, you know, Mission Impossible type, you know, superpowers to avoid them.
Of course.
High status.
I will tell you that if you think this sounds like a movie about five jerks who you would never want to be around, you would be correct. Because there's nothing redeemable about these five guys. They are selfish, immature jerks. And I thought, well, maybe we're going to find out that one of them really works for the government, or like Game Night with Jason Bateman earlier this year, where it turned out that it turned out that that Game Night was more than just Game Night, you know, like, because that's a movie about everybody gets together on a Thursday night for Game Night, but it turns out that one of them actually has a much, you know, bigger problem, and they still think it's part of a Game Night.
You know, it's in my queue. All right, go ahead.
So, well, that's the movie.
Okay. All right, so
you keep waiting to hear that maybe the Jeremy Renner character really is Jason Bourne, as he played in a movie one time. And I will tell you this, is a spoiler alert. No, they just play tag for the whole movie, and you hate them.
Oh, my gosh.
And the longer, at one point in the movie, Ed Helms' character says, guys, you know, the great thing about the game of tag is it brings out the best in us. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. It brings out the absolute worst in you. It's unbelievably unfunny. You have John Hamm, who can be, as you know, so funny, and he's playing a version of John Hamm. Like, he's like, he'll narrate to himself, the good-looking man walked into the room and surveyed his opponent. But it doesn't work. And as I'm adding up my list of the worst movies of 2018, I will only say this. Tag, you're it.
Ouch.
1.5 stars. I'm telling you, I think it's going to lay an egg as a movie, and it should financially. And I always love to read my colleagues' reviews after I see a movie. I haven't checked it out yet because I can't wait to read the reviews of critics who like this and find out why.
Because there's nothing more to make of this,
right? Really, I mean, I'm telling you, they play tag. And yeah, you know, there's some cheesy subplot things and romance and stuff, but it's just, it's just poorly executed, too. And you have all the, you know, Hannibal Buress, who is a very funny guy, in the whole movie, he just kind of stands off to the side and he's cracking one-liners that seem straight out of somebody's stand-up routine. Nothing to do with the movie. Like, one point in the movie, out of nowhere, he goes, why does biweekly mean twice a week and once every 2 weeks? And I'm like, did we just click onto a Seinfeld rerun? What is happening? It's got nothing to do with anything. And a lot of stoner humor and a lot of punches to the crotchal region. Which is always a sign of a desperate comedy.
But that's also the sign of a stoner movie, too, because for some reason, stoners love it when there's, you know, guys get racked. And I don't know what that's all about. Yeah. I've never understood. All right, Gotti.
Very quickly, I will say Gotti's a little bit of a disappointment. John Travolta's been with this project for like 8 years. At one point, Joe Pesci was going to be in it with him, Al Pacino. That sounded like an A-list project. Now it's Stacey Keach, and it's directed by the guy who played E on Entourage, Kevin Connolly. So it was going to be originally directed by Barry Levinson, the great director of Rain Man and The Natural and all these great films. So it's a very much of a B-movie.
So what happened to all of that?
You know, different producers dropped out, different financing fell through. Travolta was the constant throughout this. It's based on the son, John Gotti Jr.'s book, In the Shadow of My Father. So it's a lot about their relationship because the son then, you know, became the heir to the father. And Travolta's good. You know, you see him in the prison at the end in downstate, you know, Illinois, when he was ravaged by cancer and in the orange jumpsuit and unrecognizable. And then you see him as the Dapper Don throwing the fireworks parties and all that and being the hero to the neighborhood. Gets all that right. But it's just sort of, it kind of plays like a Goodfellas knockoff without anywhere near the budget. And it shows the family side, which is kind of interesting. Kelly Preston plays Victoria Gotti, which is kind of interesting because that's
husband and wife.
And there is, you know, this real life parallel because the Gotti family, you know, their son was killed in a car accident, you know, and the Travoltas lost a son about the same age. So it's kind of strange to see them playing parents mourning the loss of the son. It was kind of, I think, brave for them to do as actors. And I do think Travolta's great. You know, it's cool to remember that this guy has played some of the great heroes and beloved icons like, you know, Tony Manero from Saturday Night Fever and Danny Zuko from Grease and Bud from Urban Cowboy. But he's also played Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction and the bad guy and Face Off at the end. You know, so he's got a great track record of playing the good and the bad, and he's playing both sides of this here. I thought it was maybe a little bit too easy on the legacy of John Gotti. He should have shown a little more of the consequences of his murderous ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I give it 2.5 stars. It'll pop up in your queue, Ro, and you can watch it one night.
After you
fast forward past game night, now that you know that it's game not night, just game, about board games.
Game night is, you know, like, I'll see it in 18 months, like everything in my queue.
Yeah, you forget.
Right, that's how I go. I'm already planning on the Jurassic World, whatever this thing's going to be called next week. Jurassic World. I'll be seeing that after the 2020 elections, based on how my queue is working right now. All right.
Nice.
Well, you know, John Travolta is worth seeing at all times.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And things, so I'll wait for it on my queue. That's what I'm just going to do right there. I wondered when I saw this project. I thought this looked like it was going to Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah, it was. I decided to do a theatrical release. I don't see it.
Sounds like it was always a passion for him to get this thing made.
8 years in the making. He stayed with it, you know, and he didn't have to. It wasn't like he bought the rights, but he believed in it. So.
Hmm. All right, let's check in. We'll do the news here in 2 minutes, and then we've got some fun on the other side. Stay right here. Elon Musk wants to drill a hole in Chicago that goes from Block 37, which is like across the street from City Hall downtown, to State and Randolph. And he wants to drill that hole that goes from Block 37
mm-hmm.
to O'Hare. And he says he can do it, and all he wants is the rights to be able to put in that hole a big tunnel. He wants to put oversized Teslas that will take people to the airport at 120 miles an hour.
150, I even heard, up to. But, I mean, and apparently you get there in 12 minutes from downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
All you got to do is build this tunnel and make it work.
Yeah. Bill Ruthart is the great City Hall reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And, Bill, as I asked myself when this whole thing went down, when I read it this morning, I thought to myself, what could possibly go wrong? Every time we try to build, every time we try to dig anything in this town, something pops up. You know what I mean? You know? So I don't fully understand this plan, but the mayor is hot on it, isn't he?
The mayor's very hot on it today, joining Elon Musk in the bowels of Block 37 and this superstation that never got finished under Daley. He compared this to Chicago building the first skyscraper and the city reversing the flow of the Chicago River. So no shortage of lofty rhetoric from the mayor today.
All right. So
no little plans.
Right. No,
there you go.
Listen, let me tell you something. That I believe is among Chicago's, if not Chicago's, greatest contribution to the world. Right.
Sure.
Is that, you know, make no little plans. And this is the whole idea. I know I'm paraphrasing it, but the whole idea of skyscrapers, the whole idea of reversing a river, the whole idea of building a downtown the most novel way. This is the first city in the world that was built this way. And so I get it. I understand the idea for innovation. What I don't understand is what the hell they're doing. How do you build? I mean, there's the claim here, and Bill, please correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that the claim here is that he can put this machine in the ground, which is going to bore this gigantic tunnel all the way, or a series of tunnels, actually, all the way from downtown to O'Hare, and it's not going to interfere with anything, but yet, if something goes wrong in this tunnel, how do we get the people out? You have to come up, you know, to the surface every so often, I would imagine, doing that, and where are the right-of-ways, and this doesn't seem like it's just like turnkey, they can do it immediately.
Well, how long do you have to do this here, right? One of the things that's key to Musk's plan is he has a boring machine that he thinks is more powerful, faster, smarter, built on batteries instead of these long, mile-long cords that can make this process go faster. He's going to be drilling a tunnel that's 14 feet in diameter instead of the typical 28. So when you dig a smaller tunnel, it's cheaper. You can do it faster. The average boring machine, they say, runs 14 times slower than a snail. His objective is to dig faster, move faster than a snail does. And if he does, he thinks he can shave a lot of time and a lot of savings. All of this, of course, is unproven. It's never been done before. And Chicago very much is going to be the guinea pig for this. The tunnels will be 30 to 60 feet below the surface. So they're saying there will be no disruptions to traffic or surface level life in Chicago, I guess. Much of this would be done under existing city right-of-way. And there's a specific route that we've reported on that it would likely follow. But in terms of there are every half a mile or so, there will need to be ventilation shafts, and Musk and his company say they will acquire the property for those ventilation shafts from private citizens, not from the government.
You know what? We need to go in on some ventilation shafts right now.
No public funds are being used for that? Is that correct?
That's the mayor's big selling point. Not a dime of taxpayer dollars. The word we've gotten from folks is that Musk thinks he can do this for under $1 billion, which again, when you look at the typical cost of digging tunnels, that's extremely cheap. So, you know, all of this remains to be seen. What does Musk get out of it? If it works, he gets to prove that this technology works. He has a vision for literally hundreds of layers of tunnels in single areas, let alone all around the country, and he thinks this is the future. And so it might cost some money to do it here, but I guess the long-range plan is to prove it's feasible. When he was getting the skeptical questions from the Chicago press corps today.
Yeah, and I bet he was.
He loves that, too.
He pointed to his tracker. He said, not a single expert in the space industry thought I could do what I did with SpaceX. When we were the number one provider to the International Space Station, we landed two rockets on barges in the ocean and whatever else they've done. I feel like I had to become a science writer in the last couple of days.
Right.
So he points to the same with Tesla, which, you know, we can get into Tesla and all the issues that have been there, but certainly some cutting-edge technology. So, you know, the mayor has said, I'm betting on this guy's track record. He's done things that no one's done before. So
Bill, I think I totally understand that, but here, this is what my comment back to Mr. Musk and Mr. Emanuel would be.
Okay.
Which is, let's try it somewhere else first. At least let's dig something that is, how many, what is it, 17 miles? What's the distance?
17 miles.
17 miles, okay. So let's dig, let's go out in the desert or you know what, maybe Central Illinois, so it's similar kind of earth to ours.
Sure, but not the big buildings on top and the river you got to go around or under.
Let's just try that for 17 miles and see what happens there.
There's no money to be made there, though. That's the problem.
Well, we got to test. Don't we have to? Well, shouldn't we be testing this before we do this?
But that's the thing. The story goes that he joke tweeted a year and a half ago when he was stuck in L.A. traffic, I'm going to build tunnels under the city and create a new transportation system. And then that now we're at year and a half later where he's supposedly doing that. He has a project he's pitching in L.A.
This will be the fascinating part to watch with this, right, is how are they going to regulate this? He thinks he can start digging in 4 months, and he'd point out one of the things he likes about Chicago is there's not that many regulatory agencies he has to deal with.
What?
He wants to start digging in 4 months. And,
try to build like an extension to anything in your house. You have a permitting process that holds it up for a long time.
Hey.
Paul is in charge of this, right, in many ways. And he's run into some problems in California with multiple agencies, multiple cities, the same on the East Coast.
Yeah.
He seems to think that he can get things approved quickly here. The City Hall has been a lot more quiet on that front. I would think that, you know, this route is supposed to cross under the Kennedy Expressway. I would think the state would have something to say about that, and certainly the federal government's going to have all kinds of safety standards and testing in place. So,
and Bill,
the regulatory stuff will be something to watch for sure.
Bill, I am starting my new organization, Friends at a Kennedy, and I don't want nobody messing with the Kennedy
no
at any time.
Anything.
No obstruction, no nothing. I want it to be as pure as the prairie it was built on, and therefore I am going to be protesting this until I get my check. You know,
Elon Musk.
You know, there's going to be something, you know, the friends of the worms or whatever it's going to be that are upset about what's going to happen underneath there. I mean, this is Chicago. People are going to have their hands out for something here. I think Elon Musk might be a little optimistic about how. I know it's not regulatory necessarily here, but there's a
whole issue of union labor. A lot of disputes with Tesla, and he said it today. He'll use a combination of non-union and union labor, so that'll be something to watch. He's had fights with the Teamsters and other places. There's so many levels to this.
It's going to be fun to watch, though. I'll tell you something right now, though. Here's what we need. We need that this machine has to be a registered pipe fitter, and then we're going to be able to get this thing done, I think. All right, Bill, thank you so much.
Bill.
Appreciate it. Great reporting this week on this. All right, thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
Bill Ruthart from the Chicago Tribune. Right now, we have got,
you want some traffic?
Well, I don't know. Do I want news? What am I doing at the top of the hour here? You know what? It's when you guys are over there.
Justin Kaufman.
So confused about what's coming on over here. And this will all be solved on Monday, I promise. But let's do some traffic with you right now.